Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1. With Olay Total Effects Age-Defying Day Cream. Over 100 awards without paying hundreds of euros.
Well, he is one of the world's most successful producers, counting Oscars, BAFTAs and the Palme d'Or among the awards his films have won. Those films include Bugsy Malone, Chariots of Fire, The Killing Fields and The Mission. He's a passionate educationalist, a digital champion and a politician, sitting for more than 25 years in the UK House of Lords. But he's also a prominent figure here in Irish public life. Lord David Putnam made his home in West Cork many years ago, alongside his wife of six decades, Patsy, and he celebrated a big birthday earlier this week. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Miriam. How are you?
Fine. It's a beautiful day in Dublin. Is it nice in West Cork?
It's stunning. We were on camera a few minutes ago. The sun came up. It was a bit of a whiteout early on, but it's a beautiful morning. Yes, absolutely.
Fantastic. Now, listen, as I said, you celebrated your 80th this week. How did you celebrate it?
I think anyone listening to the program is going to think I'm crazy, but actually it was a rather weird day. I had a question in the House of Lords, which meant I had to go live, and it works, when I say live, virtually, in the Lords, for a question about what was happening with Facebook in Australia. I then had to write a piece of the Times Higher Education thing on digital learning, and one way or another, it was a really crammed day, but the weird thing was, it was wonderful. So many sort of flowers and stuff arrived that people doing deliveries here must have thought it was either a wedding or an illegal funeral. It was nuts.
Do birthdays, do they cause you to pause, to reflect on the past? Are you always the kind of person, David, that looks forward?
I think the latter. I really do think I look forward. I find the fuss slightly embarrassing, and I tick the years off. I mean, 80, obviously, it's weird because, you know, Miriam, 80 to me is my grandma, and she was very, very old at 80. I don't feel remotely old. So I think either I'm an aberration or an embarrassment. I'm not sure which.
No, interestingly, because I was presenting the PPAI Photography Awards on Friday night, and you did a beautiful piece for it. But when you came up, I said, you know, David was 80 this week, because I knew I was interviewing you. And all of the photographers around me went, he looks about two decades younger. So people will want to know, what is your secret? Is it just good genes? Or is it a positive attitude as well?
I think it's very much a positive attitude. I mean, I've very much got the frame of my mum. My mum lived to be 93, so there's maybe a bit of genes thing. But, you know, there's an interesting thing I was told years ago. I was a war child, and because there was so much privation, we were given a very, very strict and very balanced diet. And someone said to me, actually, for the first 5-6 years of your life, to have that diet was a brilliant start in life because there were no chocolates, there was no butter. And I think that maybe the DNA or the ingested DNA was more healthy than I realized.
And people who know you attest to your work ethic, even the way you were talking about your birthday itself, what you did in it, what drives your energy? What drives that passion?
I'm really excited about the future, and I'm very, very alarmed at and alert to the dangers. And I think it's a combination of the two. I'm very concerned about what our children and grandchildren are going to, the kind of world we're going to leave them. At the same time, I see extraordinary opportunities emerging all the time. For example, the pandemic. I've never taught as much, Miriam, ever. Mm. Teaching's never been as much in demand because the technology allows it, and I'm very well equipped here. So even the setbacks contain within them an opportunity. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Interesting, though, I was thinking about you this morning and how busy you remain. And yet fewer than one in Irish, 10 Irish people apparently in their 70s work. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. And I feel sorry for them. I'm missing out. I mean, to me, the R word, retirement, is a kind of horrifying concept. I really hope I can continue working till the day the good Lord decides that I've had enough. But I think it's a horrifying idea. Also, and I say this absolutely honestly, I'm learning more every day than I think at any other point in my life. I'm looking at a series at the moment on the BBC iPlayer that Adam Curtis, who I admire hugely, has made. It's a 7-hour series about how individuality became a big issue in the last 50 years. It's brilliant. And it's like having it's like sandblasting your brain in a way, you know?
That's so interesting. And of course, if you look at Joe Biden, for instance, he's starting one of the biggest jobs in the world at the age of 78.
Yeah, I think he's got more on his plate than I have even. Yeah,
Mind you, speaking about him, I've noticed that he keeps mentioning Chariots of Fire as his favourite film in speeches. Have you noticed that?
I have, and I did, my phone lit up about 3 months ago when he first said it. But you know what's rather ironic? It was also Ronnie Reagan's favourite film. I don't know what that told you about. Maybe if we achieved cross-party synthesis, which would be nice. Now, it's great, and I think, you know what? I understand it. I think that Chariots of Fire is gives the lie to Trumpism, doesn't it? It says that you can be a really good person and win, whereas the Trump thing was that good guys come last. So I think that in that sense, the film is extremely positive, and I understand why Biden would embrace it.
And do you think that's why it has endured, that it is so popular, that whole thing of it does give lie to the notion that good guys come last?
Yes, I do. And one of the loveliest things during lockdown is I've had any number of friends write to me and send me emails saying, you know what, because I've been looking at a lot of movies, I saw Chariots of Fire again. There's not one of them has said, now maybe they're just being polite to me, that hasn't said, my God, I'd forgotten what wonderful film it was. So it's lasted. And thank God, the royalties that I receive each year prove it. It's really, really sustained in a way that very few films do. And that's more to do with the story and the achievements of the guys it celebrates than me or Hugh Hudson or any of us who made it.
For many, of course, David, the music of Vangelis, it's central to that film. I know you feel that too. How important do you think the music that accompanies a work on screen?
It's hugely important. I mean, I think movies are made by three things. There's the script, there's the directorial qualities, obviously, and performances, and then there's music. It is the fusion of those three, Miriam, that really make great cinema. I did a really enjoyable, one of the most enjoyable things I did during lockdown was a sort of summer school event in Dublin and Belfast with Lenny Abramson. Mm. And we absolutely agreed on this. So the pieces that put the film together are fundamental. One of the things I really admired about Normal People was its simplicity, and indeed the simplicity of its music. I thought he did an extraordinary job.
Absolutely. Let's have a taster of the music from Chariots. Here's your son, Sasha, the musician and composer, playing piano on the film's main theme. So beautiful. And that's your son, Sasha, there himself, a musician and composer, playing the piano there. And speaking of music, David, we spoke last summer and you just lost your collaborator, of course, the composer Ennio Morricone. Shortly afterwards, the great director, and I know your really close friend, Alan Parker, passed away. Ben Cross, who played Harold Abrahams in Chariots, him too. How do you reflect on those losses?
It's been a really tough year. I don't know if you've ever had a period like this. I lost 12 friends last year. Only two of them, interesting enough, to COVID. The rest almost exclusively to cancer. It's terrible. I mean, Alan, I miss terribly. I used to talk to him all the time. We had a rivalry. He's an Arsenal supporter. I'm a Spurs supporter. So the perfect weekend for me was when he lost and I won, and vice versa. And I really, really miss. I miss the joking. He was a brilliant cartoonist. I've got thousands of cartoons by him accusing me of God knows what. But I miss him horribly. You can't replace those charts. You know, we were friends for over 50 years. You can't replace those friendships. There's no way in the world. I've got wonderful friends here, thank God. But I really miss her. I miss Alan every day.
And does mortality frighten you? I mean, do you think we go anywhere after this world, David? What do you think?
No, it doesn't frighten me. Mortality doesn't frighten me. Gay Byrne asked me this question on air once, Miriam, and I've never been asked before whether I believed in God, whether I believed in heaven. And I think he expected me to say that I absolutely did. The truth is, I am a man of faith. I think there is something out there. I can't look out of my back window here in West Cork and not believe there's something. But do I think there's a man with a white beard sitting waiting for me and I'm going to check in and go to some pearly gates? No. that I don't accept. I do think we're part of something very, very extraordinary. And one of the reasons I'm rather obsessed by the environment and climate change is because I'm not sure we at the moment really appreciate how incredibly fortunate the human race has been, and that we've made something of a hash of the assets we've got.
Interesting. When you did Desert Island Discs almost 40 years ago, David, you chose Elvis Presley singing How Great Thou Art as one of your discs because you felt you wanted a singular connection, you said, then with God. And how does Elvis maybe help you make that? Why did you choose that song?
I think at the time I said, because you're only allowed 8 songs and I was trying to squeeze two in. I wanted to have a prayer, a hymn, and I wanted to have Elvis. I think he also had the most extraordinary voice. I don't know what it is. No one's ever been able to explain it to me. The timbre, is that the right? The timbre of his voice. It's something in you which is electric. And he always did that for me. I still to this day think he was wonderful. And that song sung by him has an extraordinary feeling. And you know what I'm trying to say about faith? Elvis, I don't think, was a man of faith. He may have kind of gone through the motions of being, but, you know, God or whatever it is we're talking about here selected him to do something and he did it magnificently. And I do believe that.
Let's have a listen to just some of Elvis there singing that magnificent hymn.
Then I shall bow in humble adoration and there proclaim, my God, how great thou art. Then sings my soul, my Savior God, to thee. How great thou art,
how great thou art,
how great thou art,
how great thou art.
Then sings
beautiful. One of your choices, David, from your Desert Island Discs. Listen, I just want to read you an email that's just come in. Please tell David, it's from Maria Burke in West Cork. Please tell David he's one of my heroes. I'm in my late 50s and currently doing a master's in the psychotherapy of relationship mentoring. I was out walking one morning and listening to an interview with David who said, you can do anything you want. And so I decided to do the MA. I also say to my daughter, Abby, who wants to travel to the moon, I tell her that she can. And I quote David, I love him and everything he stands for, and also that he loves West Cork. Wishing him every good health, and what a beautiful speaking voice to go with such a beautiful person inside and out. In other words, positivity, it is catching, David, isn't it? Like, I mean, that woman listening to you, she went and changed her life, really.
Well, bless her. I mean, it's a very, very sweet, very sweet thing to say. You know, in a sense, just listening to Elvis just now, it summed up the earlier question. When I look at the landscape here in West Cork, and Patsy and I are so privileged to live here, you look out, that song sums up what I feel. So that's not about God per se or church per se. It's actually a feeling inside me when I look at the landscape here. So that to me is faith. There's something out there that's bigger than us. And Elvis, that song gets that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Do you also think, David, as you get older, that there's a lot of luck in life? I mean, do you think you've been lucky in your life? And how much of that plays in a role in the kind of lives we live?
I think I've been irrationally lucky. I've always felt that, when I've got to 80 and it hasn't happened, but I always felt that one day there's going to be a tap on the shoulder and someone's going to say, are you joking? You think you can go, you know, get back in line, get back. Real life. No, I've had an incredibly fortunate life. I mean, there's been some tough times, but fortunately, being married to my missus, I hadn't ever had to kind of deal with those in the way that many, many people would, because Patsy's always encouraged me. She's always been utterly positive, and I'd always had her to lean on when it has been tough.
And has that been important? In other words, nearly six decades of marriage, what's the secret to that?
It's been everything. I mean, the level of loyalty and support. You know, when you come home, you've got a lot of serious questions, and they are very, you know, they involve risk. I mean, movies constantly involve risk. And you come home to someone who said, "Do you believe in that?" "Yes." "Well, then, for God's sake, do it. Do it, because I don't want to be having a conversation in a year's time when you say, 'I wish I'd done that.'" And that is, there's no greater support you can ever have.
Put your educator's hat on, David, because I've interviewed you a lot about that. I know you're passionate about it. You've long championed educational reform, distance learning. What's your assessment right now and how COVID and home learning is impacting on young people in particular?
Well, the first thing I try and do, as well as doing this article this week for the year, the Times, is that it's not a binary issue. It's not like good or bad. I think what's happened here is we've had an opportunity, unique opportunity possibly, to look at what you can do digitally, what you can do at home, and the way in which you can be supported in your learning. The idea that it's a substitute for in-school learning, because in-school learning essentially is a social interaction, is a nonsense. But what I do hope is that schools, colleges, universities will look really carefully and say, you know what, these are the things we need to do here, and these are the things we could do better in some cases at distance. And I think what will end up is a mix and a match, which we would, and here's the important thing at Miriam, I don't think we would ever have reached this point had it not been for COVID. That's the irony.
So interesting. And I know you even pay close attention to things like the leaving cert. Students are going to have, you know, options of written papers, calculated grades, or a mix this year. Is that a suitable compromise? And what about the leaving cert itself? I mean, should it continue as it is?
I'm very clear. I don't believe it should. I think it's almost cruel. I'm someone who only ever really passed one examination in my life, and I was 10 at the time. I see there are people who are very good at exams and people who are not, and people with good memories and people with less good memories. I mean, I've had a wonderfully fortunate and rich career, but if I'd been subjected to leaving cert, I promise you, I'm not making this up, I would have failed for sure.
Yeah, so it's just a few more texts for you, David. I love listening to David. He's such a positive, generous soul. Another says, Noel says, great to hear David and Miriam. He's a man who I aspire to be like as I get older. He believes we can do anything and exudes positivity. Add that to his creative genius and his legacy of movies. Happy birthday, sir. One more. I met David Putnam and his son a few years ago while talking about video conferencing for his lectures from his home. A true gent. Final question to you, actually, David. Myself and my producer, Tom, were talking about this earlier. You're 80, you've had incredible success, but you never lost the run of yourself. Like, you're always very accessible, you're always very modest. How come?
Well, you know, it's a little bit I said about Elvis, that if you're given something, if you've got any sensitivity or any sense of empathy, your overwhelming objective is got to be to try to justify the assets you've got. And that, I think that's it. Maybe it's guilt. I hope it isn't guilt. It's also, I really love people, and I love I love what's in people. And I'm desperate that people use the qualities they have, because so many people do not optimize their lives. They just don't, because they're not encouraged at the right moment, or they don't meet the right person at the right moment, the right partner at the right moment. And it's a tragic waste. And last thing I would say on this, as we move into the 21st century, given the challenges that young people are going to meet, we have an absolute, all of us, obligation, and you're brilliant at this, incidentally, absolute obligation to give them the confidence and a sense of security that they can overcome what for many of us would be insuperable issues and problems.
Well, David, happy birthday. Enjoy West Cork for decades to come. Love to Patsy, and thanks so much for being my guest this morning.
I've loved it. Thank you, Miriam.